Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
Dan Feldman here. Welcome to the Locked On Pistons, Locked On Hornets crossover episode. Spent a little bit of time talking with Doug Branson of Locked On Hornets about how the Pistons and Hornets compare in the Eastern Conference hierarchy, whether the Hornets took a step back or a step forward this year, and how it'll shake out between those two teams this year.
You write nationally and you podcast for Detroit. Give me just a little bit of your secret energy source.
I can operate on very, very little sleep, too little sleep. It's a blessing and a curse.
A little sleep and a lot of coffee. That's what fuels the podcast writer combo.
You want to know the real trick? I can tell you the real trick.
Yes.
No coffee.
What?
No coffee.
That's blasphemous.
I don't know if I'm going to convince anybody because it's probably too late, but all my friends, all my family who drink coffee, they're used to it. And they need it, and obviously the effects are less and less. I love the taste of coffee, but never got into drinking it regularly. So on the rarest of occasions where I need a little bit of coffee, you know, literally half a cup will give me a little bit of a jolt. And that's on the rarest of occasions. But it's probably too late to persuade anybody onto that thinking.
Dan, my first job was at a 24-hour television network, and I worked overnights, and I worked with a friend who did not drink coffee as well. He only drank hot chocolate, which he called a hot cup of chocolate. So he was a little weird already. So I've had coffee ever since. I'm like, I'm not doing whatever that guy's doing.
See, he ruined it for all the rest of us by calling it a hot cup of chocolate. If he didn't say that, maybe he would have convinced you.
It makes no sense. All right, let's talk about something that does make sense, or maybe it makes sense maybe to Pistons fans, but I don't know how much sense it makes to others. These forecasts that have come out, basically saying the Pistons are the hot team in the East. ESPN's summer forecast and Kevin Pelton's RPM-based win projections have the Pistons fourth place in the Eastern Conference. How does that jive with your expectations for the Pistons this upcoming season?
I was real disappointed by that article, and I don't think Kevin Pelton's the only one, although that's the big one, but I was going to make that my hot take, my big surprising thing, that I think the Pistons are going to finish fourth in the East this year, and I lost a lot of the wind in my sails for that being a hot take, because that seems to be a fairly popular opinion, and I thought a lot of people would have teams like the Hornets, who were better last year and have just sort of been ahead of the Pistons a little bit lately as the better team. So I think it's right on. I think the Pistons are younger, they're going to be cohesive. I think they're ready to make that next step and pass a couple teams like the Hornets. How did you have those teams in the standings for this year?
I think that it makes sense to pick a team like the Pistons who have that sense of continuity. They have like youth and continuity, but I think the danger, and I'm not saying that the Pistons are anywhere near the talent level. They have much better talent than I think Orlando does, but that was always a danger with making Orlando the hot team, is that they did have youth and they did have continuity, at least with the players, but they haven't been able to make the leap. I think the difference with the Pistons is they have a great coach in Stan Van Gundy, and they have a few veterans on the roster as well. So I think that's where you can get a little safer with making that leap to pick the Pistons fourth in the Eastern Conference. So I'm personally okay with it in terms of just preseason. I don't know how you can be too upset about preseason expectations, but I wonder how these expectations will play within the Pistons organization or within the players. Do you think that it will affect them at all?
That's a very interesting question. I think there could be a couple different schools of thought on that. So last year, the Pistons made the playoffs for the first time in, I think, about 7 years, which is a very, very long time for a franchise that's won three championships, that went to conference finals for about that long every year in a row. So there's just a been a different level of expectation here. And the Pistons were very public. And this was not the first time they did it. They did it a couple of years ago and fell flat. But they were very public last year that, and with more of a new roster, they want to make the playoffs. They need to do that. That needs to change. Andre Drummond took the microphone in the before the first game to address the fans. And usually it's just a quick, thanks for coming. But he added, you know, we're going to push for the playoffs. And so I think there's this real organizational commitment to embracing that pressure. It's obviously not the highest bar just to make the playoffs. A lot of teams around the league have that as their goal. But it was a real thing here in Detroit, and they met that challenge. I think this will be similar, where they're not going to be in the East upper tier with the Cavs. I don't even think they're in the tier with the Celtics and Raptors. So it's nothing over their head where I think the level of pressure internally and externally is something that's going to get to them. But also along those same lines, I wanted to ask you about the Hornets. And, you know, after going so long without winning a playoff game in Charlotte, the fact that they got that monkey off their back, does that change expectations for this team?
I think their ultimate goal, and it was a goal going in, was not to win a playoff game, but to win a playoff series. I think that was stated over and over by both players and coaching staff that, you know, the way you get a fan base back involved in a franchise, especially a franchise that has this weird history that the Charlotte franchise has with leaving for New Orleans and then getting a team back and then transitioning the brand. I think winning that playoff series is the big milestone because it legitimizes a mid-sized market and it will help attract free agents. So I don't really think that the attitude there was, whoo, well, we did it. I think it's, man, we missed an opportunity to knock down one of those season goals.
Do you agree with me on this? The Cavs are in a tier by themselves atop the East. The Raptors and Celtics are somewhere 2 and 3. And then there's a wide group of teams, including the Pistons and Hornets, fighting through for 4 through whatever.
Yeah, absolutely, because I think there are several teams in the East, and they started to wake up last season, and they started to make certain maneuvers to modernize their team, and Charlotte was one of them by going out and getting a lot of three-point shooting and initiating that 4-out, 1-in, or 5-out type of offense. Now, the Hornets did it a little differently. They were pace and space without the pace. They didn't really move up and down the floor. A lot of that had to do with MKG's injury, but I think that it's going to be another battle within the middle of that Eastern Conference. Last season, 4 teams finished tied, including the Hornets, for that 3rd through 6th. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's that way again. And it makes it, you know, it's a long season, 82 games. But I look back at last season, a couple of early losses to the Hawks and the Heat ended up really damaging the Hornets because, you know, the Hornets Heat positioning battle at the end could have come down to those few division games that they lost. So, you know, every game is important. As much as playoff basketball is completely different from regular season basketball, I'm still excited about the beginning of this season because those games could factor in this Eastern Conference playoff race. I want to talk about Andre Drummond. It seems like every summer he's put under a different microscope by different people asking, is he really as good as people think he is? This summer, it was Zach Harper from CBS Sports examining his rim defense and essentially arguing that though he is a huge body and he has a good shot blocking ability, the Pistons are better at defending the rim when he is on the bench. I don't know if you saw that article. What are your thoughts on the big man's post defense skills?
I did see that article. I thought Zach raised a lot of good points. I wouldn't go as far to say that the Pistons are better defending the rim when he's on the bench, especially considering the alternatives are Aaron Baines, who is not the most high-flying. If your criticism of Drummond's going to be it takes him a while to load up and get off the ground, which I think is fair, and that impacts his ability to block shots and protect the rim, definitely a fair point, but Aaron Baines is not going to be the answer to that. The other alternative would be John Luehr, who can play center in plenty of matchups, but there's often going to be opposing centers who are too strong for him, you know, somebody like Roy Hibbert. So I don't think it's that drastic, but the Pistons need Andre Drummond to be an elite defender. They need him to cover for the players behind him, and he's not quite there yet. Plenty of raw tools, but he's just, his defensive recognition is not fast enough. He doesn't make the quick rotation quite quick enough. He's gotten way better. Like, this is what you expect from somebody in their early 20s, and they're making progress. I wish the Pistons could copy the Hornets formula a little bit, where you can play good defense without needing to rely on your center quite so much the way a lot of teams do now. Is there anything that you see that the way the Hornets do it that the Pistons could copy a little bit?
Well, they all play together. I mean, they all play rim defense together. I mean, they're everyone's, ideally everyone's playing on a rope, and you know, it's a lot of communication. They talk about last season, Marvin Williams was the quarterback of the defense. Normally that role is MKG. Of course, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist injured last season. But their whole thing is, and a lot of this originated with, I think, Al Jefferson and having to sort of accommodate his defensive weaknesses by sagging down in the post. And, you know, you're not incredibly aggressive on those pick and rolls. And so a lot of it is just staying disciplined, and a lot of energy though gets expended running out on shooters, because, and mm-hmm. you're going to give up some open three pointers doing that. But the Hornets, that they've decided that that's the way they want to play defense. And they were, you know, considering that they didn't have a designated shot blocker on the team, they did an outstanding job last season defending the rim.
I think Steve Clifford is just fantastic, and he can put that in. And, you know, he worked with Stan Van Gundy, and I think Van Gundy is, I wouldn't say envious is the right word, but, you know, appreciates what Clifford does. And, you know, of course you can't keep a good assistant coach with you forever. They're going to get a head coaching job, but maybe that would make the Pistons' lives a little easier in the interim if they had Clifford who could help and solve some of this stuff in Detroit. But the main goal, the end goal, is definitely to make Andre Drummond the type of defensive center where you don't need to cover for it. He's the one covering for everybody else. This would just be to help them get through his learning curve.
Well, if I could boil down the strategy into a few words, I would say it would be, I don't know, construct a freaking barrier. Maybe that's how we could put it. We'll put it that way. I don't know if it's ever been put another way. But I want to stay on Drummond, though. His free throw shooting is keeping him off the court in key situations, as admitted by his head coach. He has little interest in trying something radical like an underhanded shot. Without a change in rules in terms of the Hakka type of play, do you ever see him being able to play offense in close game situations? And do the Pistons, who rank near the bottom of the league in free throw shooting, despite having some decent free throw shooters around Andre Drummond, do they have any kind of plan to make up for his deficiencies at the line?
If they have a plan, I think they've already used it. If they have another one, I haven't seen it. I think their very limited plan was to sign Aaron Baines, who's a good free throw shooter for a center, so that in the moments you need to get Drummond out of the game, you have a viable, you know, appropriately sized alternative. Other than that, I don't know exactly what you'd do. He's not a good free throw shooter. I don't expect that to change in a significant way anytime soon, probably ever. I think the pros in his game greatly outweigh that. I still think he's a very good player. But it is a liability you're going to have to work around in a way that, you know, maybe you wouldn't have to with the very elite players, you know, the players with no flaws in their game or minimal flaws. But that's just a real drawback of having him as your star player. You just have to hope you built a big enough lead in the late minutes where the other team fouling is not going to be a problem. And I think, if anything, the Pistons have been a little taken off guard by just how big the issue is, because there's nowhere to hide him. Like, if Andre Drummond sets a screen, he's involved in the play, you can hack him. It's an on-the-ball foul, even if he's just the screener. It makes it so hard to have him on the court.
I'm going to make a weird comparison here. I think that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is a lot like Hornets power forward Cody Zeller.
Ooh, I want to hear this.
because I think both players came into the league and have been improving every single year, but they've been improving quietly, but they've also been improving in certain areas. And then both players have seen their outside shooting take a little bit of a dip. For KCP, he improved his ball handling last year, I thought, and his defense took another step forward, but his three-point shooting took a dip. What do you think KCP should be focusing on this season to have a breakout year?
Three-point shooting. Yeah, I don't think it's any more.
I sort of led you into that
one. More complex. I don't think it's any more complex than that. I mean, he's a streaky shooter. There'll be stretches where he's on fire. He'll hit 5 of 7 or something in a game. That's not uncommon to see him get hot for a game or a few. And I think maybe it's confidence issues. And I think that leads back to what we were talking about with the defense and the difference between Charlotte and Detroit, where the communication in Charlotte is so great. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is the Pistons' best defender. He's also a pretty quiet guy by nature, and it's a little harder if your shooting guard is the one who's on him to communicate everything. And so you combine that, it's not ideal for setting up that communication, and that's, again, Andre Drummond needs to step up. He needs to do that. But to your question here, yeah, it's three-point shooting. If he can become more of a reliable from beyond the arc, he's going to get looks. The Pistons run a ton of Reggie Jackson, Andre Drummond pick and rolls, and there are going to be spot-up shots open if he can make that. And I'm guessing you've seen sort of the same thing where you have a wing whose three-point shooting is not a strength, and that's in MKG, and how much of a difference that can make in an offense if he could make those shots.
Well, yeah, and the Hornets fans got a preview of what could happen if he does make those shots in the 7 games that he returned. He hit a above the break three and a corner three-point shot, and if he can develop that, it will allow Steve Clifford and company to continue to run that 4-out-1-in offense that made them so successful offensively last season. So we'll see if that continues. Two other players that I think compare very similarly are Kemba Walker, point guard for the Charlotte Hornets, and Reggie Jackson, point guard for the Detroit Pistons. Two players that were on the fringe of making an all-star appearance. And I keep getting asked this question, and I wonder if you're being asked the same question. What does Kemba Walker, and in your case, Reggie Jackson, have to do? What extra thing do they have to do to launch themselves into not just all-star consideration, but an actual all-star selection? And honestly, I mean, there are little places where I think Kemba Walker can improve his game, but I think there's a little bit of an aspect here of you have to be considered, and then if you can repeat that similar performance, you now have credibility and you can be selected. It's a lot like, you know, they say you have to lose, you know, an Eastern Conference Finals before you can win one and go to the championship, and it's levels. I think all-star selection's a little like that too, unless you're just a absolute superstar. Is there anything that you think Reggie Jackson can do in particular to launch himself into an all-star selection?
Well, I think that's a great point about needing to be considered for a year, get that attention, and then maybe the next year you can do it. I'd say the big difference between Reggie Jackson and Kemba Walker, besides a little more specific than the very simple that I think Kemba Walker is better, Kemba Walker kept it up in the second half of the season and maybe even played better. So he's coming off of that. Where Reggie Jackson, yeah, he got all-star consideration, but only because his first half of the season came first. If he had his second half of the season before the All-Star break, he would not have been getting All-Star in consideration. Not that he was bad or dreadful or anything like that. He just was not nearly as strong. And so he's going to have to make a more meaningful step forward, shoot a little better from beyond the arc, although he's on the right track for that. The big thing is going to be defensively. He really got worked in the second half of the year, and have the energy to be able to run the offense and more consistently fight through all those ball screens that opposing point guards are going to put him through over and over, and do so at least provide a little disruption. That's going to be the real next step for him. I don't know how much that will get him direct all-star consideration, because defense for guards especially It's just not something that turns heads, but it could make the Pistons better. And as you know, teams with better records have better chances of getting all-stars. What do you think the next big thing for Kemba Walker is to break through?
I think now that he's developed that relationship with Nick Batum and you add MKG, who is a secret weapon in pick and roll offense that, you know, a lot of people don't know about. And part of that is that he hasn't been on the court a lot, but he's great as a role man. So I think that Kemba could definitely take a step forward in his assist numbers. And I think if, you know, Kemba's always going to be a scorer first point guard, no one is ever going to mistake him for Chris Paul, but he has room and now he has weapons and he has relationships now that he can exploit and use to help up his distribution numbers. Because I think, look, he averaged a little over five assists. I think if he takes that to six, you know, somewhere between six and six and a half, I think with the rest of his numbers staying the same, I think it would be hard to deny him. And he has room to improve his three-point shooting even more, I think. So if that shot continues to develop, he continues to get more comfortable from beyond the arc, then you combine that with he's not crazy efficient in clutch situations, but he's always going to have the ball in his hands, and he'll make a few highlight reels knocking down some game-winning shots. So he'll have that in his arsenal as well. I think, if those numbers were to continue, I think he has a great shot at making an all-star game, so it should be fun to watch.
I find it very interesting how a player like Nick Batum, not directly how he changes how good Kemba Walker is, or if you were on the Pistons or somebody like that, how good Reggie Jackson is, but how a player like him can affect perception. Because Reggie Jackson is the only legitimate ball handler distributor in the Pistons starting lineup. So much falls on him to get the offense going all the time. And so that makes it easier for him to put up assist numbers, for him to put up some scoring numbers also, where Walker can rely sometimes on Batum to initiate the offense and bring that extra element, another passer. And it might hurt Walker's numbers a little bit, but help the Hornets. It might protect Walker from some situations where he's more apt to turn the ball over and he can give it to somebody else. So I do think it's interesting how players like that affect the perception.
Yeah, and I think, too, that there's some tape now from that Miami playoff series where they were able to key in on Kemba Walker and essentially take him away for two or three games. And so I think Kemba Walker will have to improve his assist numbers if teams late in the season decide to do the same thing that Eric Spoelstra decided to do with his defensive scheme. So he'll have to do that. Let's talk about Stanley Johnson. 1 year later, how does that pick look? What's his outlook for this upcoming season?
Pretty much exactly what you would expect 1 year later from when he was drafted as a teenager. Plenty of raw talent, some flashes of it, some flashes of being in over his head, just tremendously competitive, works very hard, the great attitude, everything you'd want in those regards. But just his comfort level in the NBA on either side of the pick and roll, he hasn't looked there yet, still figuring out where to go and when. But there are flashes, there are signs and everything you'd want to see so far. But at some point, he's going to have to put it together. Will it be this year? Maybe. Be next year? Maybe. But I think everything he's doing is on the right track. That's what happens when you draft somebody so young, which is, I guess, the flip side of what the Hornets strategy was in that draft. Instead of loading up on all those picks and getting way younger, getting Frank Kaminsky. And I think he's one of the more interesting players in the league. He's already pretty good, but obviously less upside coming out of college as a senior. Where do you see him next year on the Hornets?
I think his role will be fairly similar. I think he averaged a little over 21 minutes a game last season. I think that number stays the same. He'll be in a backup power forward position, backing up Marvin Williams, who stayed healthy last season, expects to stay healthy this season. So I think he, you know, maintains that probably first, second big off the bench, and he'll try to draw some attention outside. Now, the one thing I see changing is if he has put on a little muscle, if he's put on a little beef, then I think that Steve Clifford and assistant coach Patrick Ewing are going to want to get him looks inside more. They talked about it last season, and for one reason or another, it did not come to fruition. I think this season you see more looks for him in the post because he just has a nose for getting the ball in the basket once he's down there. He looks comfortable. He likes using a variety of moves and his quickness to get past defenders that he has no business getting past. So I expect him, he's not lacking confidence. I think he was on a team and in a situation where there were a lot of veterans and they had a very specific path that they wanted to take. And I think it's tough for a rookie to come in and say, okay, give me the ball. I'm going to do this, do that. I think he took a little bit, I don't know if you want to call it a back seat. I think he just played his role, which was a quiet role. Hopefully you see him expand that role somewhat this next season and get more aggressive. But a lot of that will have to do with how his body develops, if he can develop a stronger NBA body. We'll see. And he's got to get better on defense, and he has admitted that. To stay on the floor for a Steve Clifford coach team, you have to play defense. You have to play defense smart. And that's what he'll try to do this next season.
Would you rather have him or all those draft picks from the Celtics?
So here's my thing. I don't play craps. I'm not a big gambler. So I think that the entire draft is a crapshoot. I think if I'm in the war room and I've fallen in love with player X, and not just Frank Kaminsky, but if I fall in love with a player, I think you take that player. And because you're rolling the dice either way, let's roll it on a player that you feel good about. And they felt good about the prospects of Frank Kaminsky. And I think he's similar to Stanley Johnson in your description, at least, that he's raw, but he's raw offensively, I think, but he's shown flashes of things in terms of his post offense that could make him a special player. But you know, he just needs time to develop. And I think again, you just have to, when it comes to the draft, you do all the intense research that these teams do, and you fall in love with a guy and you take that guy. I just don't think that those lower draft picks, you know, the bottom of the first round, I just don't know what those really amount to. And we saw the Celtics, you know, they couldn't give them away. The Hornets weren't the only team that didn't want those picks. So there's got to be something there, I think.
Right. I guess it also depends on what the exact picks were. And I'm not sure we've ever seen a concrete 100%. These were the picks. I think there was definitely some talk that it could have been a higher pick or in the same range in a future draft. I would, for what it's worth, I would have taken the trade if I were the Hornets. Although I also would have, if not taking the trade, both for the Pistons and the Hornets, I would have picked Justice Winslow.
But Dan, you don't drink coffee, so I don't trust a word you say. Hey, Dan, real quick, how do the Pistons beat a team this season? Under what circumstances do the Pistons win a ball game?
If they're making their three-pointers, they're probably going to win, because they're the type of team that one, they're going to take a lot of three-pointers, and those are a high-variance shot, especially for the Pistons, a bunch of streaky shooters. And they're also some of these younger players who are up and down defensively, who are going to be more engaged if their shot's going in. The big one I had for you before we get out of here,
sure,
I guess it's a little broader, but are the Hornets going to be better or worse next year? Because I really like what Courtney Lee brought to that team. I really like what Jeremy Lin brought to that team. I think Sessions and Hibbert, I mean, those are fine consolation prizes, and I thought it was tremendous to get back Batum and Marvin Williams at the price they got. And that maybe it was the best case scenario, in my opinion, of what it could have been going into that offseason. But I still think there was a decent amount of talent lost. Do you think they're going to be better, worse, pretty much the same?
I think that if MKG plays 50 or more games in the season, they will be a better basketball team. And if he plays, that's my over-under. If he plays less, I think they're probably the same and trending worse, because the bench did lose some significant pieces. I think the dynamic that Jeremy Lin and Kemba Walker had will be tough to replicate with Ramon Sessions. Though I think when you dive into the numbers, just in terms of raw contribution, Jeremy Lin and Ramon Sessions had some similarities last season, though Ramon Sessions, it was a little bit of a quieter output there in Washington, D.C. And I think Lin gave the team something in clutch situations that Ramon may not be able to replicate. And then Jefferson gave them this dynamic of having a guy they could go to offensively, especially in the playoffs. They needed a big body. They needed someone they could throw the ball to and have him go get offense. Does Zeller develop into that kind of player? That's definitely a big question mark. But MKG has such a significant impact on the way that this team plays both offense and defense. And the one thing that the Hornets needed in that Miami series was a two-way athlete, and they're going to need it this season. So if MKG stays healthy, they're a better basketball team, I think. And if he doesn't, then watch out. I'm going to need more coffee.
I think that's totally fair. And it, just from the Pistons standpoint, it's so interesting. I just talked to Jared Dubin of Locked On Knicks yesterday, just to hear these things around the league of like this big X factor, where I just don't think the Pistons have that. I think their floor and ceilings are relatively close. I think they're, you know, pretty deep starting in the bench. Nobody with a real major history of injuries. Like, I just don't see as much variance for the Pistons. And so I think there are a lot of teams like Charlotte could be a little better, could be a little worse, but I feel like the Pistons bar is pretty level.
Well, Charlotte won 48 games, and they won a lot of their games in the first half of the season because they had some powerful shooting on the bench. But if you remember, the starters did not play well at all. I don't expect that at the beginning of this season because I think MKG changes that. But also, I think Nick Batum and Kemba Walker have had a year to get to know one another. Zeller is feeling more comfortable at the center position now. I just think starting five for the Charlotte Hornets going to play significantly better than they did at the beginning of the year last season. So that's why I say they have a shot at replicating 48 or maybe even getting to 50 if everyone can stay out of the training room.
Yeah, I could totally see that. The difference I see with the Pistons, and one reason I'm very slightly higher on the Pistons, is because the Pistons have that cohesion where, yes, Walker and Batum have it, but MKG doesn't. And I think there's real value in that chemistry. And maybe on paper, these teams are closer to similar, good fitting pieces on paper for the most part. Like, I think these players on both teams fit together. The talent level might be similar, but all the Pistons had a little more time together. And I think that could give them an advantage in a very, very tight race.
You can follow Locked On Pistons and Locked On Hornets on Audio Boom, or you can subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. Thanks for listening.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.